Welcome to the Skinny Podcast, where we talk all things dermatology. I'm Carol Nicotero Ward.
And I'm Terry Rudd.
Before we get started, we want to let you know that our monthly podcast is now available on iTunes. Search for us using the keywords The Skinny and subscribe for free. Now on to the news. In this month's program, we'll look at the long-term effects of adolescent tanning.
We'll bring you the latest figures on what dermatologists are earning.
And we'll tell you how some physicians are helping patients with albinism in Africa.
Then, cosmetic counter-host Dr. Lily Talakoud offers tips on how to navigate the sea of moisturizers, creams, and ointments.
And Dr. Alan Rockoff tells us of a misunderstanding with a patient involving a bottle of scotch.
We start with a tale of the long-term consequences of short-term gratification. Data show melanoma rates increased among young women who frequented tanning salons during their teen years. Skin and Allergy News reporter Heidi Spleet has more.
At the American Academy of Dermatology's summer meeting, Dr. Daryl Riegel of New York University said, unfortunately, it's still considered cool for teen girls to be tan.
For the first time, we are seeing increased incidence in young women. Women in their 20s and early 30s, and the only thing they appear to be doing differently than young men is going to tanning beds.
The spike in melanoma rates among women who are now in their 20s and 30s coincides with high levels of UV exposure in their late teens.
Education is critical. When we talk about incidence rising in women, and particularly young women, incidence is related to protective behaviors. So wearing protective clothing, avoiding the midday sun, and equally important, avoiding tanning beds. I don't like to call them tanning beds because that sounds good. I call them tanning coffins.
Moving on to some pocketbook news. Our contributor Gina Henderson has new stats on how dermatology practices are faring in today's tough economy.
A national survey shows that dermatologists in group practice saw their median compensation rise 2%. From 2009 to 2010, the median income for dermatologists increased from about $385,000 in 2009 to nearly $393,000 last year. Meanwhile, specialists overall saw a larger gain in compensation. For all specialists, median income climbed 9.5%, but their paycheck still came in a few thousand dollars lower than most dermatologists. Over the long term, dermatologists are surpassing their specialist peers when it comes to compensation. Since 2006, dermatologists' median income has gone up by 17%, while specialist compensation has climbed 11%.
Putting money matters aside, here's the story of a group of dermatologists who are doing what they can to help patients with albinism in Tanzania. Nassim Miller has their story.
A group of dermatologists from around the world have started a project called Hats On for Health in regions of sub-Saharan Africa. They're working with local groups to make hats and give them to people with albinism. The Secretary General of the International League of Dermatological Societies, Dr. David McLean, told us more about it.
They're a very poor population. They have been discriminated against locally. They have very poor education levels because while education is free, the uniforms and the books are not free. And if you have almost no income, it is literally impossible for the average albino child to be in school. So all of that contributes to a situation that is anything but ideal. So in cooperation with Stiefel, the ILDS has launched the campaign Hats On for Skin Health to raise money from global dermatology and concerned citizens to support this effort in East Africa. We have located a hat manufacturer in Africa in the same town as the regional training center, which is Moshi, Tanzania. And that hat manufacturer is currently producing template models for children and for adults that will meet the standards of the American Academy of Dermatology for ultraviolet light blocking. We expect to have handed out at least 15,000 hats by this time next year.
You can read more about Hats On for Health at skinandallergynews.com.
Now on to the cosmetic counter. When it comes to choosing the right moisturizer, patients, and even their physicians, can be overwhelmed with shelf after shelf of products from which to choose. Our contributor, Dr. Lily Talakoub, offers a few simple tips to help your patients choose well when they hit the beauty aisle.
When you talk to a patient that asks you a question about moisturizers, you have to take into consideration several factors: their skin type, what they like using, and what they need. Their skin type being how oily their skin is. The oilier the skin or more acne-prone, patients like to use lotions. They're less greasy, they don't penetrate as much, and they don't provide as much hydration, but they also don't cause breakouts. The drier the skin is, the more greasy the component you need, so you need a cream or an ointment. People with dry skin need thicker, more lubricating property ingredients. Finally, when you ask a patient what they like to use, it depends on what they like to put on. Generally, people that don't like greasy components in their creams need to use lotions. People that like greasier, thicker components, such as those in body creams or anti-aging creams or night creams, generally have to stick to a cream. What I tell people that have dry skin in particular is to understand the difference is if it comes out of a pump, it's thinner and it's more of a lotion. And that's not going to be as hydrating as something that comes out of a tub that is actually thicker and more greasy that provides the best hydration.
And now, from his office in Brookline, Massachusetts, Dr. Alan Rockoff shares the story of a man who was very nervous about the treatment of genital warts and how a bottle of scotch seemed to help.
Nobody likes cryosurgery, especially in the groin, but Cliff liked it a lot less than almost anybody I've treated lately. Despite my attempts to reassure him, he writhed in agony when I froze off his warts. He punctuated groans and grimaces with expressions of anxiety and fear. "How could I get these?" he demanded. "I haven't had sex in years." I did my best to calm, explain, reassure, but it didn't help much. So I just finished as fast as I could. When Cliff came back for follow-up a couple of weeks later, he seemed a lot more relaxed. He smiled and handed me a 1-ounce bottle of Chivas Regal, the kind they keep in hotel refrigerator bars for a quick nightcap, or serve on airplanes, if you have your credit card. "Thanks," I said, perplexed, "but why are you giving me this?" "When I left after the last visit, you told me to bring you scotch the next time I came," he said. The light slowly dawned. "Cliff," I said, "I didn't tell you to bring me scotch. I told you to have some scotch yourself before you came." Cliff looked confused. "Well," he said, "I went to the store across the street and just bought this for you." "That's very kind of you," I said graciously. Cliff was much calmer the second time around. Even though the scotch stayed in the bottle, I guess it worked anyway.
Well, that's all for now. We'd like to thank this week's contributing reporters Gina Henderson and Heidi Spleet. This podcast has been produced by Nassim Miller and Mary Ellen Schneider, under the guidance of Skin and Allergy News Managing Editor Amy Pfeiffer. I'm Carol Nicotero Ward.
And I'm Terry Rudd. For more news and information, visit us online at skinandallergynews.com. And don't forget that we're on iTunes. So search for The Skinny and subscribe for free.